Hey, pal.
Hey, buddy.
There's two things. Not a cult. Not trying to I think I just fucked this over because I think the only time you say not a cult is when you actually are a cult. So maybe we are, but if we embrace fuck. Okay. So I mean, a cult following would be really cool. Okay, so not a cult. We'll workshop that, and then not a church. I mean, we're just doing Bible study. It's just not trying to lead people necessarily.
Right.
But now I just realized maybe I have to go back on that because it's really easy to become a church and then we can get the tax breaks.
That's a good point.
So there aren't two things right now. Anything you want to add to that then?
Yeah, this is our opinions on things, so do with that what you will.
I'll let you start. You St. Mary. What you want to say, why you're interested in doing this?
Why you gotta make me start? Well, I
Okay.
come from a Christian background, so I'm interested to go through a Bible study from an agnostic point of view. And I think it's going to be fun.
Are you going to ask me now?
Oh, is that what I'm supposed to do?
I mean, it's only polite. I asked you.
Yeah, you're right. Well, tell us about yourself. Why do you want to do this?
I mean, I'm going to try not to copy what you say because you already summed it up really good. Growing up in a very Christian-enforced family kind of thing, and then slowly growing out of it and not really knowing what to do, and becoming an agnostic, and then it's kind of a weird thing how this came about. So for some reason I'd tell my mom that I was quitting my job, and then also at that moment I'm like, I'm just gonna find out finally that I'm not a Christian, because I didn't ever really want to bring it up. It was easier. I just didn't talk about the stuff anyway. It's like, yeah, whatever. She was really lost, just trying to figure out how someone who was Christian forever could just lose all that belief. How'd this happen? And I'm just like, well, these are the thoughts I had. Not really questions to her, but these were the ones that led me down my path. And it sounds real weird to say my path. I don't like that, but I'm gonna go with it. So that goes on and on, and I'm like, okay. She's like, would you do something for me at the end? Would you go through this Bible study book I gave you and just try it out? I'm like, oh, crap. I think I put that in Goodwill or something. So she wanted me to go through that. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. Why not? But I'm like, okay, you have to read some books I send. So I sent a Mesopotamian book because I wanted her to see some of the similarities in the Bible and in them. So I got them on Amazon, shipped them to her. She's got them. I haven't heard if she's read anything about it or not yet.
Okay.
And I mean, I'm not any better. I only did a few these days because I immediately did one kind of okay, yeah, we're gonna get this done, whatever. And I just didn't do it for a while. Then one time it was high. I'm like, oh yeah, I should probably do that. And it was very interesting. I don't know, I just really liked it. It was I don't know of another word than interesting, just to be able to read it from a different perspective. And I just really liked that, and taking notes down, just getting lost and sidetrack things to look up other stuff while I'm just doing it all. I don't know, it was just really fun. And then so another time, the third and final time for now, I did it on purpose, and again it was wonderful, and it was just like a very kind of fulfilling thing. But I was finding that writing or typing these notes as I'm having them is terrible. I really just need to record myself. And I'm like, that kind of went on to this idea. So it's more just this is the best way to record my notes.
I like it.
That was very long. I'm sorry you had to sit through that.
That wasn't bad that you have to tell a story. I think that puts good insight into why we're doing this.
I know, I feel like I just like rambled a lot and then you just had like a nice little elevator pitch. That was great.
That's funny.
Okay. Everybody else probably knows this, but for the few that don't, Reese's not a good podcast snack.
Good to know.
So, I just thought that was going to be, like, a fun thing to actually go through. But let's see. This is the book, Experiencing God. And it's supposedly, they say, top of the top, like, a really good get you on track Bible study. You know what I remembered? I introduced you with your silly tag name. And then you talked about yourself, but you didn't introduce me.
Didn't. This is our high priest, everyone.
Okay, now it's sounding a little culty.
Yeah, now it does sound a little culty.
Okay, the authors. Let's see. This first guy, he's got four paragraphs. Henry T. Blackaby is the founder of Blackaby Ministries International and the former special assistant to the presidents of following agencies of the Southern Baptist Convention, the International Mission Board, the North American Mission Board, and Lifeway Christian Resources. His father was a deacon and a lay pastor who helped start churches in Canada. Henry is a graduate of the University of British Columbia and Vancouver. Wow, there isn't a lot to really, like, interject. We're getting a lot about, like, this is his resume right here.
Right.
I guess you want your, you know, if you have an about the author, you want it to be kind of like a good resume, but make it easier to read.
Right.
Like, let's see. I'm going to skim parts of this right now. For honorary doctorates, pastor churches in San Francisco and Los Angeles areas before going to Faith Baptist Church in Saskatchewan. I served as director of missions in British Columbia. Dozens of books and spoken churches and conferences in 200 countries. That's almost all of them.
That's a lot.
Okay, I can't remember how many right now. I'm going to look that up because I'll tell you my guess. But, like, I don't want to feel, like, really out of date. But it's either, like, either something like 212 or 259.
That's where I was exactly in that. Those two spots.
There are 195 countries? That go down. I remember it being above 200. So this is older. So yeah, he went to like all the countries.
All of them.
Wow. Okay, but how? There's got to be several that would not want him to enter the country.
Yeah, I'm confused on that.
They smuggle him in on like a little donkey cart and woo! I don't know why I said donkey cart. Like, half the places would have, like, better things than we have, you know. Supercar, like, need a ride? Hop in.
Yeah, for healthcare.
I like how it goes to healthcare. He counsels Christian CEOs of major companies and has spoken in the White House and United Nations. Am I wrong that, like, within the United Nations, like, their actual section is classified as their territory of the nation?
I believe so.
How do I look that up? This is not telling me anything like I want to know. Okay. I'm going to sideline that. We're going to, because we have to have some way to debate something, so we're going to go with that, yes, those are the representatives countries, like, that they control that part. So if he just, you know, cheated and, you know, went around some of those parts of the UN, like, I was in the countries. Sneaky. Oh, gosh, but he needs to do a better job talking to all the Christian CEOs of major companies. Why are Christian CEOs of major companies?
Why are they?
Yeah. Should a actual Bible-following Christian be a CEO of a major company?
No. I don't know. I don't think so. That's my point of view going in.
It reminds me of like a, it's just something like, how come like no one good or like would, that would take care of their people, like how come they don't get the money that like Jeff Bezos gets? And someone's like, they never would because they're not holding out for themselves and stockpiling everything. They're using it to help other people the entire time. So they're never going to get to that far.
Exactly. Unethical to be a billionaire. Because at that point, you're literally earning money just by existing. Mm-hmm. Everyone is working for you.
That's the dream.
Yep. At least pay him a livable wage, though, you know? Like, yeah, I have feelings. Feelings about it.
You want to get into him right now or no?
This guy's going to space just to go to space.
I mean, I would go to space just to go to space.
Right, but he has people working for him that can't afford food this week. That's unethical. He has the ability to stop that. He has the ability to end world hunger. He's not doing it, though. He wanted to go on a joyride to space.
Let's see. Oh, a little blurb about his wife. Is former Marilyn Sue Wells. Did she die? I think she died. They have 5 children. Richard, Thomas, Melvin, Norman, and Carrie. I think only one of them's a Bible name. Surprising.
Yeah.
Breaking the mold. Okay, we got another guy. Claude V. King. Discipleship specialist at Lifeway Christian Resources. He did this course and worked with T.W. Hunt, who that guy is, to develop the Mind of Christ. Now, the Mind of Christ is a book, but I really like the phrase develop the Mind of Christ because it sounds silly to me. Like, you're still building him right now, and like, okay, what does he think about this issue or whatever, and we're still making the Christ. They're all like these little like flying saucer things with claw arms, and they're just like lifting up light up bricks, and there's just like hundreds of them going around.
Yes.
And at this point, like, it's like Marge's hair, just like his brain just keeps going up and up and up.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I saw it.
It's made of light, so it doesn't weigh a lot.
Yeah.
No, he's an author or co-author of more than 20 books and courses.
That's a bunch. Okay.
Yeah, but courses can be like a one-pager. And a lot of times, that's several people working together like, okay, what are we going to put on here? And then there's 4 questions at the end, and then they all get credit. Do you know God?
That's lame.
Do you follow God? 4th question. And then you're like, oh yeah, let's call it a day. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, names of books. Growing Disciples, Pray in Faith, Fresh Encounter. Hey, I'm just giving these people like all sorts of free advertising.
Yeah, look at that.
Check out these books. Call to Follow Christ, Come to the Lord's Table, Meet Jesus Christ in Concentric Circles of Concern. Serves as the president on the board of directors, Final Command Ministries. He's a graduate of a college and a seminary. Ooh. Now we got his son, Richard Blackaby. I keep wanting to say Blackberry or Black Baby, but it's just Blackaby.
Blackaby.
Hell, his oldest son, so he's got to inherit this business. Then there's going to be like some mafia stuff. And the youngest son's going to be like, this is mine. I was the favorite. And then there's going to be like hitmen going everywhere. And
yeah, they're going to fight for ownership.
And I'd go to that church in the front row, like, see all the action.
It'd be like a wrestling match.
Okay, let's see. His oldest son holds a PhD in history as well as an honorary doctorate. Served as a pastor and seminary president, currently a president of Blackaby Ministries International. Keep it in the family. He and his wife Lisa have 3 children, Mike, Daniel, and Carrie. Richard is the author of Cross Seekers, Putting a Face on Grace and Unlimiting God, and has co-authored 12 books with his father. That's some cheap, like, his dad already got the fame, so I was like, here, Dad, can you just put your name on this? It'll help me out, you know? Like, and then we'll get this on here, and like, sure, son. And now he's got, you know, a track record of books. He's got this, like, just instantly.
Yeah.
Let's see. Editor's note. Okay, maybe this will be interesting. Henry Blackaby is the primary author of the content of this course. Claude King wrote the learning activities to assist you in your study. Oh, Richard contributed material to the revised edition. So he didn't even, like, he wasn't there. He just got to add a little bit onto Daddy's book.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be mean.
No, but it's true.
I guess there will be lots of roasting, and I can't continue to say sorry.
Yeah, don't apologize for your...
I mean, it's part of the critique.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the illustrations of the authors are written solely from their personal viewpoints. Others who were involved, if given the opportunity, could write different and more complete accounts. So they didn't have someone, like, just interview them to, like, write their bios for them. Henry T. Blackaby wrote that unreadable thing. And he is the author of this book? I didn't really think about that before.
That's fun.
Okay, let's see. Let's see if the preface. Let's see, when we first wrote Experiencing God in 1990, we didn't realize the enormity of the spiritual hunger in the hearts and lives of God's people to experience God. I mean, if you're promised it, and many people never feel like they did, then they'd be like, where is this? Why am I not getting this?
Yeah.
Let's see. God's people had head knowledge, but little heart and life experience with God. They knew there had to be much more to the Christian life than more and more activity, but they didn't know what was missing, nor did they know what to do about it. They longed to experience God. Wow.
Yeah. Like, how would we know what they wanted? How would we know what they needed?
Oh, we're getting to the good part.
Ooh.
My eyes just glanced. God had granted me an understanding of himself and his ways. He had also brought Avery Willis and Claude King into my life. God was ready to hear the cry of his people. I don't know what made this guy so special. Maybe we'll find out.
Maybe we will.
This is what the people were saying. Show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day. Oh, that's a Bible verse. Psalms 25, 4 and 5 in KJV. I mean, that King James Version, but why is there an N? Is it a new King James Version? Is that legal?
That's been around for a while. Yeah.
A new King James Version?
Yeah, the new King James Version.
Oh, we were just the strict King James Version. I never even knew about the new. It was very much, you don't get an NIV if you don't have to, but even then, you're better off with nothing. Like King James Version. But, like, dude's dead. How can we have new content? Like, he's dropping new stuff after centuries?
I don't know, man. I think they just revised it.
So then who's allowed to revise it now? Because if there's no more miracles, then how is there direct communication to prophets to write a Bible?
I think it was changing the language to make it slightly easier to understand.
But then it's already gone through problematic translations. How is that going to help it? That's going to actually make it harder because now you're translating it into how you're perceiving it.
Yeah, exactly. It's been translated so many times.
But I am interested, though. Like, do you know what version yours is?
ESV.
I've never even heard of that.
English Standard Version.
Really? Okay, and I have the King James. And I was interested in, like, having, like, two different ones to, like, get some comparisons and how they are. So that's good.
Yeah, by the time I was a teenager, we went to, like, a really big church. So, you know, the ESV, that's the trendy, hip version to have, I guess, at the time. I don't know if it still is, but that's what I had.
Why was it so trendy and hip, though?
It was like the youth pastor had it, so it was like, oh, that's super cool. Everybody's got to get this Bible.
Like, I bet the real pastor was like, I'm sick of this shit.
The real pastor. I think he used the same one. I'm not sure. I don't know. But the youth pastor had this Bible with a metal cover and it's like all engraved and stuff. And everybody in the youth group wanted it, so everybody got one.
Hip. Yeah, no, my youth pastor was popular with the kids, and I'm pretty sure, like, yes, my pastor would think, oh, come on, enough of this shit. Still now to this day, like, I really respected that guy. Like, that is, like, the kind of Christian. Like, he was actually, like, living it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, that's kind of what eventually, like, got him pushed out. Like, it was kind of, like, there was some maybe drama happening with that. I don't know. But
that's kind of how I think about my youth pastor that I had, too. Like, he's what I expect a Christian to be,
mm-hmm.
what they should be. Let's get back to it.
Okay. Experience God was my life message. This is how I had always understood and walked with God. This is how I had pastored and guided God's people. I had shared these truths in many places where I was asked to speak. Over and over again, people ask, have you ever written anything on what you're teaching? God's people need to hear these truths. Avery Willis, the person responsible for adult discipleship training at the time, gave me the encouragement and opportunity to put my message in writing in the workbook, Experiencing God, Knowing and Doing the Will of God. Whew. Since 1990, God has used this study to touch and change millions of lives. We're only in the millions. This one has a copyright of, let's see, 2007.
Hmm.
17 years, and it's only millions of lives, not tens of millions, not
right.
One, you know, like not over 40 million. It's millions.
Millions.
Maybe, you know, I don't know, what's the population of California? That's gonna be way too much, isn't it?
Yeah, that one's gonna be high.
Oh yeah, 39. Let's do Nebraska.
That's quite
out there. 1.93. Well, you know, like a Nebraska. Maybe we'll throw in Oklahoma too. I don't know. Let's see what they got. 3.9. Okay, 3.9 and 1. Yeah, he reached out to all of Nebraska and Oklahoma. I wonder if math is a good, you know, podcast topic. I'm sure there are specifically math ones.
Oh, I'm sure of it. There's a podcast for everything.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Millions of lives and thousands of churches around the world. Again, only thousands of churches?
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I get, you know, if he has to, like, go to each of these churches, that can be quite a bit, but, like...
Do you have to go to them to touch them and to reach them?
Not when you're making a book to sell to them to do that. That's what this is talking about. The book, how the book is touching them. So they're not selling a lot. That's why it needed to be revised.
Mm-hmm. They were like, all right, people did not like this.
At the 10th anniversary, more than 3 million copies of the workbook had been distributed. Oh, we could have just kept reading.
There we go.
I guess then the argument could be made, like, but that workbook could have touched, you know, 10 people itself.
True, because this one workbook is influencing 2 people.
Unknowable.
Unknowable. Truth. And shoot, it could be in a library somewhere.
They really won't like you to, like, fill it out, but...
No.
Not in a library.
Take you now.
See, and God was using other Experience God resources. So this workbook is now published in 47 languages.
Wowie.
I'm going to say that's a lot. And has been used in almost every denomination. We are amazed that God, in his mercy and grace, would use such a modest work by ordinary people. At least they're modest.
Super modest.
Yes, chosen.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to call yourself modest or humble, though?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. You can be called that, but you can't call yourself that.
Yeah, because then it's like, sounds very egotistical to say that about yourself.
Oh no, is there going to be haters now?
I don't care. That's what I think. Somebody can disagree with me. That's fine.
Let's see. He had chosen to grant his favor on his truth expressed in this study. The original workbook has given birth to many experiencing God resources listed at the right. Oh, okay. Shouldn't we all be chosen to have his favor granted on us? Isn't that the goal? So is everybody supposed to be making lesson books? Because that is apparently one way to get granted favor. True. And then you'll just endlessly be doing other people's lessons books that are very similar. And
yeah.
Yeah.
You got to go through all the different topics, you know? You only know your main focus. That's why everybody makes all the other workbooks. To focus on the other areas that are your weak spots while they do the workbook.
Let's see what these are, if they're listed to the right. Okay. The EG trade books and audiobook. So this book.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
Yeah, okay. The EG day-by-day devotional book. This is supposed to be a day-by-day devotional book.
Okay.
That's a separate thing. Experiencing God at home.
Oh.
No idea what kind of media that is. It's just, they trademark that. Anytime you experience God just sitting on your couch, whatever, it was because of EG here. Yep. Mm-hmm. We put little cross-shaped little speaker robots in your house, and you can just sense when you're experiencing it. And then we'll just apply a 0.54% charge onto your account so that we can continue with the flow of energy. We have to keep those holy lines open.
Yep.
The beacons really want to get to them. They're always breaking them down, so we got to keep this holy water pumping. Takes the Pope a long time to get that going. We, however, also don't like the Pope, but, you know, sometimes we do, so, you know, that's a whole gray area.
I don't know. This Pope is pretty cool.
Yeah, but, you know, these people don't like the. I'm making an assumption, but this is. I'm a gambling man, and I'm gonna say these people don't like the Pope.
You're probably right.
That's what I was saying.
Did you hear he? I don't know what it's called formally, but basically he was like, being gay isn't a sin. That is how it is.
So I did not hear that. When was that?
Earlier this year. I don't remember when. I think sometime in the spring.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to ask Sarah. I think she's the one who showed me the article.
Let's see. They had an audio devotional CD set. Isn't that the audiobook? They had a documentary.
Ooh.
They had a musical.
All right. We need to find this.
Experiencing God, the musical, 7 Truths for Experiencing God, Bible study.
We're
Is it a musical about a Bible study? Oh,
I bet that's in a library somewhere, and we can find that.
That's got to be a special feature. We got to do that and check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right, I'll check libraries.
Not just going to check the internet?
I mean, I could do that too, but a library's free.
Okay. It might be on YouTube. I don't know. They'd have to get a paywall up. They're not going to let you put that on YouTube. They'd take that down if you recorded that.
Good point. You could probably rent it on YouTube.
Maybe. Let's see. Experiencing God's Invitation to Young Adults. Now, there's another one. The Youth Edition, 7 Steps to Knowing, Doing, and Experiencing the Will of God for Teens. Why is that such a long title, and why does it start with Youth Edition and end with for Teens? Not just teen edition, you know, cool teen Bible. We've been overwhelmed by the response to the truths shared in Experience God. So many lives have been radically changed in prisons. I mean, they're already being radically changed, and so it helps people.
Yeah. Even if I don't agree with how the main communities, the core values that are taught in the Bible, some of them I definitely agree with. And they definitely help people, especially like if you're in prison and you're at the point where you're willing to accept this belief system, you're going to be like latching on to those core beliefs, you know, you would do unto yourself. I don't know the words. I'm really high right now, but you know the one.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, a semicolon. Okay, so in prisons, in the military, and in all walks of life. Including lawyers, judges, CEOs, professional athletes, and politicians.
Oh, those politicians.
When were they radically changed?
I don't know. I didn't hear anything about our politicians being radically changed.
Okay. Thousands of churches, high schools, colleges, and seminaries have been greatly helped and radically changed. Well, why don't you use another word?
Yeah.
It must be branded. TM.
Man, I'm not smoking the right strain for this. I should get a radical OG pre-roll.
You think this is going to be rad?
I don't know.
Let's see.
They're saying radical a lot.
Oh, I hope it's rad, or this was a terrible idea. God has used these truths to affect people around the world, including leaders of countries, government officials, and diplomats. Well, he needs to get to work.
Wow.
Hundreds of missionaries are on the fields of the world because of this study, and hundreds of others are now serving as pastors, evangelists, and faithful servants. Can I become a pastor after completing this study?
I don't know. What does it take to become ordained?
If I make up my own thing, I can ordain myself.
You can get ordained here. Really easily.
Isn't it just for like the wedding stuff?
I think. I don't know what all that gives you.
Oh, we'll see what Martha Stewart is telling me. Find out the rules of all things. That's what I was trying to do. We'll have to look into that. It's when I finish this, I says it right in the beginning. So I can become one if I try hard enough. Otherwise, I would just be an evangelist or a faithful servant.
Ooh, evangelism, man. That's some real culty stuff.
That's where the money comes in. Maybe that's what I have to do.
Okay, but like, you can't convince me it's not culty. Just saying, you're like thought engraved in your brain. You're to be a warrior of God and teach everybody else that they're to be a warrior of God from such a young age. That is called brainwashing. Hello, cult. That's my experience, my belief.
I don't know if you're alone on that. Like, that's a big part of the deconstruction story, you know, kind of like. I don't know. I think that's like a common thread.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, the specific group that my parents were a part of before I was born, but like what my older siblings grew up in, there's groups everywhere, support groups of people who deconstructed from families that were part of that because it's so harmful. And once you grow up and realize the harm that does, it's like, oh my God, I need people who understand this. And there's so many.
What kind of harm you meaning?
You know the 19 kids and counting family?
Yeah.
So it's like that. It's called ATI. I can't remember what that stands for right now, but it teaches very harmful things. Like women are less superior than men. Men are to be the head always. Women can't teach. Women have to wear dresses or skirts that go down past their or to their ankles. Not allowed to cut your hair. No makeup. It just like...
They have the separated sides on the church for the men and the women?
I'm not sure. I think so. They also do a lot of their parenting specifically. Is very, very toxic. And they have whole homeschool curriculums around it. And like my older two sisters and my brother had to go through that when they were younger. It's so harmful. It teaches children that they don't have a voice. They don't have a personality, their own self. They are to just do as they're told always and do as their parents want them to do, be what their parents want them to be. It completely strips them of their individuality. Ooh, and blanket training.
Oh, don't let them, they can't leave the blanket.
Yeah, and then you spank them if they leave or if they try to crawl off. I have lots of feelings around spankings in general, but an infant, that's so harmful psychologically. Mm-hmm.
at one point, how do they learn that it's okay to come off the blanket?
Doesn't make sense. My parents were in this in the mid-80s to early 90s.
So then what made them actually, like, leave that?
My mom didn't like it. She felt like she was being stripped of her rights.
Well, I mean, that's good.
Mm-hmm. I guess my dad listened to her and agreed.
That's even better.
Yeah. I don't know for sure, but I don't remember hearing about any fight about it. And there would have been a fight about it if he didn't agree. They decided to leave that. He was still a pastor, so he went on to be a pastor wherever they were at that time.
So was he a pastor in that?
I'm actually not sure. I'll have to talk to Sarah more about that, because I bet she'd have a lot of good info. Because I wasn't alive yet, and she was the oldest, so she was through it all.
Yeah, because it's like, if you're a pastor into it, like, you should know what you're getting into to not then be like, oh, well, maybe we need to skedaddle.
Mm-hmm.
Just to have, like, a whole church set up, and then, oh, see ya, bye, then leave to go to a different church, and then they gotta find another one. Oh, gosh, my church is always, they couldn't keep a pastor.
Yeah, that's just how churches are, I feel. My family moved around so much. I'm the youngest of 5, biologically, and I think 15 years apart. But it was because my dad moved to different churches all the time. Towards the end, it was because he was kicked out of those churches.
He just wanted to, like, try them all out and see which one was for him. I like teaching this one, or get a feel for the crowd. Maybe, like, give them good energy or something.
Man, plus I think it helped. My mom liked change. She wanted to move a lot because they moved a lot when she was young, because she was a pastor's kid. So
that's such a weird thing to do, like, to me.
Yeah,
you know, someone who, like, would rather not move, and I guess has moved a few times, but I don't consider myself as moving around a lot. So just that, like, how are you just able to, like, just go? I have too much stuff. Like, I can't just pack this all up and go.
Yeah. Why would you want to put in all of that effort and work?
Just to then do it again because you know you're in a cycle and you're going to keep doing it?
Yeah. Wowie.
Very good. I'm going to find where we were.
Oh, totally. Sorry.
Oh, that's fine. This is what it's about. Oh, this is a good line. Only heaven really knows how God has chosen to use experiencing God. That's just, like, perfect line. I don't know, that's like high level, we have Christian goal line. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
No, I feel you.
I'm going to just cut all that out. I think that was dumb.
I'm just overanalyzing it from my perspective of, but you only say that because the book says so. We don't even know if this book is fiction. It could be fiction. We don't know. I mean, been translated so many times, and we know for fact that people have been paid to change things in it. So, like, that's a nice thought, but I can't bring myself to accept heaven or accept that that's the only way to experience God, or what that energy that we consider God to be is.
How would you describe that energy?
I don't know. I don't think that I've experienced that. To consider the Holy Spirit, that kind of energy, to be the same as experiencing God. Would you consider that?
I mean, isn't that, like, how it says, like, how you would experience, because sin has pushed him so far away that he can't even just reach us now, so he uses the Holy Spirit?
Yeah. Okay. How would I describe that? Personally, I get chills. I get chills all over my body.
Kind of like when you hear a really good song.
Yeah. And it's like a whole wave of, it's hard to explain, because it's like a wave of energy, like a presence you feel.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. Because
I had this feeling about doing this podcast.
That's dope. The interesting thing for me is I felt that as a Christian, you know, doing worship and singing the songs, or, you know, in prayer by myself, or whenever, you know, and I would always associate that with the Holy Spirit. But where I'm at now, I still feel those presences. And I say those presences because I can now identify that as multiple different feelings. Sorry, I went down a rabbit hole and now I, like, lost the words to explain.
That's okay. I was just making me think too, like, it was very interesting that I would have an experience like that for doing something that seems very against.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I told my mom that, she'd be like, the devil's trying to trick you. He can do that too. And it's like, well, then how are we supposed to know if it feels the same?
Right.
You gotta know. Man, I really want to like tell people about this, but like if I tell people about this in any way, my mom's gonna find it. She's not gonna really like this.
No, I feel.
But she's going to find it, and she's gonna listen to it because I'm her baby boy, and she really does care. But it's just gonna like, I don't know.
She's not gonna like me. Oh.
I mean, I just really realized this, but feel like I've always realized this, but now it's just like hitting me. Like, my mom would probably like you because you look the part of a good looking woman.
Okay.
She's about the looks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I had like one girlfriend for like a week in 7th grade. And like, my mama had a scrapbooking store at that time and she found out. And so she went out over there and hung out with my mom right away. It's like, what the fuck? Like, we're just now, like, yeah, we're holding hands because we're dating in middle school, whatever kind of thing. No, I didn't hold her hand. I was too afraid to hold her hand. Because my hand was too sweaty. I'm like, oh man, come on. It's probably why it lasted a week. No, it's not why it lasted a week. So then my mom, like, saw her and was like, oh, I really like her. And then, yeah, like, at the end of the week, Friday, there was actually, like, you know, one of the dances there. So we were supposed to go, like, or was it Saturday night, whatever. And so then she breaks up with me right before, and it's like, oh, no. And that, like, I know it shouldn't have, but I was really weak right then, I guess. And that just sent me into, like, a very bad place, like, relationally. It's just, like, I was just kind of, like, what did I do wrong? How can I fix it? So always, like, focusing on her and trying to get back with her in some way. And that really like messed me up for a while. And it all sucks because she was trying to like mess with someone else that liked me. And I kind of liked them. So then we were talking later and she's like, yeah, she did this thing like on IM Messenger. I don't know. I didn't have internet during that time. In the sort of beginning era, like someone was pretending to be me and like trying to like weird her out or whatever, do things. She's like, you don't have that, right? I'm like, she didn't tell me what was happening. She's like, oh, you don't have one? You got one? I'm like, no, I don't have the internet. She, okay. And then, but yeah, we're talking about that later. And it's just like really weird how one single like act in that can like trigger just the domino effect throughout like the rest of your like school career.
Yeah, well, that's wild.
Oh, but anyways, going back to that, so mom would always bring up too about like, oh, well, what about that person? What about her? And I'm like, gosh, mom, like, I don't need you pressuring. And but then it was always like such a weird childhood. Because it's like there's this dual feeling of like you need to find someone so that you have someone because you're in a small town anyways, and get married. You gotta have to find someone that you can like stand to be with and get married. But also like you shouldn't be dating. You don't be needing like boyfriends, girlfriends or anything. I mean, for me, definitely, you know, don't need girlfriends, but you sure as hell better not be having a boyfriend.
Yeah.
So it's like this weird thing, like, so I was never able to like approach them about dating or anything. And so it was just always weird when she'd bring that up. And then, or when like I date a couple other people, in the back of her head, I could always tell she was like comparing her to like what I could have had or something.
Yeah, that's so lame. It's interesting to me because I had a very different experience. My dad didn't like the idea of me dating, but we didn't talk about it, you know, just didn't talk about it. My mom, on the other hand, like shoved it in my face so much. And her big thing was always, we'll get you to lose some weight. And then the boys will think you're beautiful. And then they'll like you and want to date you. And so like, that was always like a thing with her. From the time I was like 13, like I wasn't allowed to date at 13, but like I needed to lose weight so that the boys would like me. So they would.
Yeah. So you had time to prep yourself for it.
Yeah, yeah. She did that to me and Beth, and then Ruth and Sarah were ridiculed and labeled the whores of the family for having boyfriends.
Oh, the goal.
Yeah, they were boy crazy.
Oh, yeah. Just, how can you handle those? They're not going to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my mom. Even like my grandma was like that. They'd always be after my sister about her weight. And my mom was just after her granddaughter about her weight. Just like, what?
That's awful. That always made me mad with my mom, because I'm like, you weigh more than me. Like, why are you? You're not even healthy.
She's already married. She's already done the thing. She's doing the thing.
She found her person she could tolerate, but apparently not anymore.
No. I don't know if I knew some of that drama, but we'll have to table that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that someday.
Okay.
You can keep going.
Oh yeah, of course. Where was it? Was that really, the resource has also had a profound effect on our lives and the lives of our family. We have all received God's grace as a continuing affirmation of his hand on us for his purposes. And we continue to obey God as he directs us. So him and his family are all special.
Interesting.
I mean, you gotta be able to, you know, pass it down through the sons as needed. We're all good here. I mean, I guess that's typical. You know, God's just like, hey, dude. Abraham, your family, they're good.
Do the thing.
So Mr. Blackaby wrote a lesson book, and God was like, yeah, you're good. So if that is a true, if we take that as true, as in that is a thing that happens in the Bible and may have happened here, then there's selectivism. And it's not just getting saved. Like, how do you... Like, there's an upper level to getting saved, to where you and your family have to not worry about anything.
There's an elitist layer.
Yes, that's the word. Good job.
Thank you.
I'm just reading what I'm reading. As we seek to be good stewards of his grace, we cry out, let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysterious of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. 1 Corinthians 4, 1 and 2, NKJV. So, wait, they have to memorize all that? And that's like what they do in the morning? Just like, they just, okay, wake up, cry out, let a man so consider us servants of Christ and stewards of the mysterious God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one to be found faithful. There's just no flow to it.
Lot.
Yeah.
That feels really extra.
I feel like I was just very extra, and I'm very, let's see.
Valid, though.
Oh, he's just going on more in this. As God has granted us, especially as a family, many open doors to share with God's people, we beg our friends and the many friends of experiencing God to pray for each of us. And then he lists them. Marilyn and me, Richard and Lisa, Michael, Daniel and Carrie, Tom and Kim, Aaron, Matthew, Connor, Mel, and Gina, Chris. He had five kids. Are these all the grandchildren too? Like, yeah, it's his family. So now you have to continue praying for them. So they have to keep their status. They gotta get a quota.
I see. That's why they have so many kids.
Yes, I'm unlocking the secrets. I'm gonna infiltrate it. Thanks must also go to Claude King, who helped develop the first workbook and who continues to remain faithful to the Lord in serving him. That sounds like a threat. Like, now, Claude, I know you had some issues here, but you're going to remain faithful to the Lord, right?
They're all whipped. That's what the entire book of Job is about. Are you enough for God?
What I don't understand is why that's like a story that's clung to as like a good, I was really hoping we'd talk about this sometime, as like a good thing. It's just like, oh yeah, we're making your life suck. Yeah, it's fine because I know you love me, whatever. I'll help you when I'm done having this bet with the devil. But then it's like all his kids die and his wives die and like all of his people die. And then at the end it's like, well, here's new ones. It's like, it just didn't matter who these people were. It's like, what? Like, and it's just like, he rewarded him in the end. It's like, but Batman is emotionally scarred. Like,
right.
I had to have an attachment to one of those people And I had to mess him up. I'll be like, sorry, Job, I gotta prove a point to the devil.
My grandma, my stepdad's mom, sent me a card after Chase died, reminding me of the story of Job and that I'm just like that. And also the prodigal child, because I need to come back to Christ first so that, you know, my Job story works out.
Oh, come back to him and then you can get your new husband.
I guess. I need to find a good godly man to fix me.
I told you. If you told your dad that we were doing a Bible study podcast, he would have been sold.
You're right.
He'd be lining up, like, I don't know,
no,
everything. Like,
you want to listen to it then. And I don't want that.
I know.
Because otherwise,
but he wouldn't even have time to listen to it. Like, I'm gonna try to do something with this, get it out fast. But he was just like, "Oh, you're doing that? Let's get everything moving. Come on, how fast can we get a ceremony?" And then he'd hear it, and he'd be like, "No,
never stop this, halt." Yeah. All right, should we get right back into it?
Sure. There was literally half a sentence left on this page.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. You know, Claude King better be remaining faithful. And to those at Lifeway Christian Resources who continually improve and provide experiencing God. Oh, so gotta thank the publishers.
Of course.
That was that. So we have Unit 1. Oh, we have a verse to memorize. Extra credit if you do, but I'm not gonna do that. Or maybe I should. That way I'd have these verses on hand.
I'm gonna play it by ear. Depends on the verse.
But let's see. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. John 15:5.
What about every atheist that's done so many things? Or every Muslim
that's
done so many things?
No, the only fruit you bear is more followers.
Last part there, without me, you can do nothing. Or correct me if the words were different.
Oh, no, that's fine. You got it right. And I completely get your point. But also, they would say that wasn't them doing it or whatever, or God still has a hand in things. He uses the people that don't believe in him. But then this is always a big thing. It's like, well, that same person will also tell you that, yeah, of course you have free will, but not if everything is so meticulously planned out and like wanting these, like, I'm going to do this to do this, like this little game or like choose your own adventure type thing. He's flipping through. Like, oh yes. Cause then I want these people to go here. Like,
yeah, it's like everything's both in God's time, but you have free will. You'll have free will, don't worry. But everything's still in God's time.
Yeah, you can do what you want to do. And if you do anything good, then it's like, well, God did that. God saved that man's life through your hands.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then that means God's also like in his hands when, you know, he's not able to save someone's life because then, you know, it's part of the plan. Yeah. But then they'll never say it like that. It's just like, yeah, you didn't have God on your side.
Or God, this is a trial for you to help grow you and strengthen your trust in him.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. Now, title, God's Will and Your Life. Okay, this is kind of sounding like a game show thing. Like, God's Will and your life.
Yeah.
No, it's more like, you know, one of those instructional video things. Gonna walk you down a path and like show you everything you're gonna need to do.
Yeah.
All the 50s animations. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You said the 50s animations and I have a different picture in my head now.
Oh, what did you have?
I was picturing something that you would see like in The Good Place with Michael enacting this video that's being, you know, as if like a cheesy instructional video, you know.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Now I'm thinking more Fallout 4 or 3. I don't know which one I watched more of. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever played one. So this little intro section is the Vancouver World's Fair. When the World's Fair was coming to Vancouver, our association of churches was convinced God wanted us to try and reach the 22 million people who would come to our city. We had about 2,000 members in our churches. How in the world could our little group make much impact on such a mass of tourists from all over the world? Lots of numbers. I feel like we're going to get more numbers.
Yeah.
This is a very statistical book. Let's see. 2 years before the fair, we began to set our plans in motion. Total income for our association was $9,000. Following year, it grew to $16,000. The year of the World's Fair, we set a budget for $202,000.
Wow. Well,
that's a big jump. Why are you just telling me about how much money you were going to spend?
Right.
how are you getting that? I don't know. Why are there like 9,000 to like percentage of a lot? $202,000.
Right.
They had commitments that would provide 35% of that budget. Okay, so that's a weird loan. 65% of it depended on prayer. We'll give you 35% of $202,000 if you can pay the rest. What kind of loan is that? That's just a weird way to write it. They're just like,
yeah,
we took out, you know, they helped us with this less amount. Well, they really went grandiose there.
Yeah, sure are.
Can you operate a budget on prayer? No, that's the next line. That's not just me like how are you doing that? And he says, yes.
I have feelings about that.
Tell me them.
I don't know how to express them yet. You should keep reading.
Okay.
To hear more.
But when you do that, you are attempting something only God can do. So then are you not supposed to do that if you're not supposed to do what only God can do?
Keep reading. I need explanation.
Well, what do most of us do? We set the practical budget, which represents what we can do. Then we might set a second hope or faith budget. The budget we really trust and use, however, is the one we can reach by ourselves. We do not really trust God to make a practical difference in what we do. So if you weren't able to save up enough money when there was an accident, you just didn't trust God enough that there'd be enough there for you. How many more stories of that are than just like, oh, thank goodness, like, oh, this just happened, but I had this and we were fine. Like, no, everyone just gets screwed over.
Right.
Look at the correlations, like how many of those people didn't believe in God, like, but then you can't, that's not legal to ask. So there's always like the, well.
Yep.
As an association of churches, we decided God had definitely led us to the work that would cost $202,000. It's so like weird, like big and specific, like God really called for us to need this much money because my son bought a boat.
How else are you going to baptize the people?
Look, if they were able to make it work on, you know, 16,000, because they were only going to get 9,000, but they got 16,000. That means they're like, we can make this work for 16,000 and take the rest. It doesn't tell me like how they're using the money differently. Maybe it will. I have one more paragraph. Let's see before we go on further.
You're right.
So, yeah, definitely led us to work. It cost that much. That became our operating budget. All of our people began praying for God to provide for everything we believed he had led us to do during the World's Fair. Just prayer money. Bing. At the end of the year, I asked our treasurer how much money we had received from Canada, the United States, and other parts of the world. Just say from around the world. Who cares about Canada, United States? What? We had received $264,000. Wow, they leveled up their praying stats, like, max. Like, they knew what they were doing.
That feels so slimy.
Well, it's not slimy if you just know the stats of the game.
That still feels
people
you know what you're doing. That feels extra because you know what you're doing.
People from all over North America assisted us. During the fair, we became a catalyst to see almost 20,000 people accept Jesus Christ. 20,000? There's 22 million. You're like, oh yeah, 22 million. Come on. Like, 20,000. That's small. Like, I have to see how small that is. I have to remember how to math. Okay, that's 0.09%, right?
Oh, like, my God. Wowie. That's a really small amount.
Imagine how much more they could have reached if, you know, they used all of what they gave and not like 16,000 because they knew it could work on 16,000. Well, I don't know. I don't know. They never said how many people they reached with the $16,000. They didn't mention that stat, so we can't compare that properly. So, yeah, 20,000 people accepted Jesus Christ. You cannot explain that except in terms of God's intervention to save 0.09 of a bunch of people coming to a place.
Small amount.
Maybe, you know, a good percentage chance, you know, there's people that already are and you don't have to worry about them. So then you factor that, you know, that's going to throw every, well, I think we would just easily double it because I'd say it's about 50% chance. So then it would be, you know, 1.8% of the available population.
There you go. There you
look
go.
At that. Double. We just math their way to, like, upping their own stats. Doing them a service. Yeah, I'll send the invoice. Only God could have done that. He accomplished it with a people who had determined to be servants and were moldable and available for their master's use. How are they getting this money?
I don't know, man, but I just had the thought. You can be in the next revision of the book because you can give them the stats.
Oh, that'd be great. Oh, so that was the end of the Vancouver World's Fair. Did you kept saying ooh about the second paragraph and you told me to keep going. Do you need me to reread that?
What was the initial thing that set me off? Oh, the prayer and the budget. So how I feel about that is that they set this low budget and they use that for the church and for the work that they're saying that they're doing. And then where's the rest of this going? To their fucking mansion? To their new boat? Their yacht? You know? And it makes me frustrated because how many church leaders are out there are freaking millionaires? Too many is the answer. Too many. It's slimy, man. That's all I have to say. It's slimy.
Keep seeing, like, top 15. Oh, here's one. Top 31. So, I mean, if they're going all the way up to top 31, then there's got to be a big pool, unless 31 is so specific that there are only 31 and they're just arranging them all. Who knows? I mean, we could know if I dug deeper, but, you know, what's more important right now? Oh, okay, yeah, his little footnote. And then that'll be that. Next time we can do a lesson. Throughout this book, I will give illustrations that sometimes mention amounts of money. Don't get caught up in the amounts, since they are relative to the year when the event took place. Some amounts may seem small by current standards, while other amounts may seem inconceivably large in other cultures or economies. Focus instead on the faith required or the miraculous timing and provision of the Lord in regarding to need. In the case above, the amounts merely indicate the size of faith required when the people compared the proposed budget to their previous experience. Okay, so don't worry about the money because it's all relative to, like, the year and the economy of the time. But also worry about the money to be like, wow, look at how much we got. But don't worry about it.
But also look at how much we got.
Yeah, just back and forth.
But don't you stress about it because we took it from now.
Look how much faith we gathered. We harvested it.
Oh my God. Tithing is another thing that really bothered me. So we were always taught 10% of your paycheck goes to your tithe. And that's how you budget. It's because if you're working, you can give at least 10% of what you're making back to God. And so I'm like, okay, but my full paycheck isn't even enough to live off of. And you want to give 10% of that to somebody who has millions of dollars? Like, come on, bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, but you have to trust that if you give that 10%, that you'll, like, get more in return. And so if you don't give it, then it's like, well, you're not trusting it, so you're not going to get it. You got to.
Your faith isn't strong enough. That's your problem right there. It frustrates me, though, because I see people I know that are struggling financially who feel obligated to give that 10%. It's like, you can barely put food on your table for you and your children. Like, stop giving money to the establishment, damn it. That's not... Like, take my beliefs out of it. That's not what Christianity is about. If you're already struggling, you shouldn't be giving that money away. If you're already struggling, you shouldn't feel obligated to give that money. That money should be going to help those people in the church that are feeling that, that are struggling and need that help. It shouldn't be going to...
Yes.
Help in different countries, you know?
Yes. Yeah, it shouldn't, because it's a lot of times it's like, oh, we're sending money to the missionaries and things like that. Meanwhile, it's like, oh, pray for Martha because she needs another knee replacement. No, it's like it's money for the church, and then the church is not supposed to be the building. The church is supposed to be the people. So then it's money for the people so that when the people need it, they can use it.
Exactly. That's what it's supposed to be. That's what the Bible calls it.
So then in that sense, it's trying to set a societal rule, which I will always give credit. That was a good thing that religion did. I feel like it'd be hard to not create something like that to get people in line in the beginning, at least to just help set up with civilization, to answer the questions that they needed, like they didn't need to worry about.
Yeah, I get that. Like, I appreciate that they brought that idea and structure into our society. I just don't appreciate how they went about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing.
So trying to set a societal rule, kind of like a thing, like,
yeah,
like to have faith that everyone's going to put in what they can so that when someone needs to get, they can use it. The faith is then that, you know, everyone's going to be doing this kind of thing. Not like a faith that, like, you know, you just give your money and hope somebody helps you later when you need it.
Right.
Like, these are like some, like, the core things for what civilization.
Yeah.
Which, of course, back then it wasn't always just, you know, money.
Right. There was trade.
Do you have anything else you want to bring up for tonight?
I don't think so.
So how are we supposed to, like, sign off this thing?
I don't know.
Bye, pals.
Bye, pals. Ew, that was gross. That one was bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good on my tongue to come out. Okay. But I like buddies. Because that one's, you know, better. Buddies. Bye, buddies.
I'll do my thing and you do your thing.
But bye, buddies doesn't sound good. None of them sound right.
You just had this whole thing that you needed to be buddies, and now you're like, I can't make it work. How do you want to say bye?
I don't know. Because, like, when I'm talking to somebody, if I'm just casually speaking to someone, I don't usually use their name. How about just catch you later? Is that good? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Catch you later.